Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show improve. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
As I mentioned, I was in Montgomery for the opening of the National Memorial for Peace and Justice, and it was a very emotional experience for many, as you might imagine, especially for descendants of lynchings who came to see their ancestors' suffering acknowledged, in some cases for the first time. But it was also deeply moving for people with other connections to the story it tells. Margaret Rinkle is one of the people I met at the opening. She is a writer. She's from Birmingham, Alabama. And while many visitors there were dealing in general terms with a painful Southern legacy, Ms. Rinkle had a distinctly personal perspective. She knows that her ancestors owned slaves, and she spent years trying to come to peace with her family's legacy. Ms. Rinkle is still in Montgomery, Alabama, where she's been exploring the memorial, and she was kind enough to take some time to talk with us. Hi, Margaret. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, Michelle. Thank you for having me.
So just to remind us, how did you figure out that your family had been slaveholders in the past?
Gosh, I feel like I've known it for so long. I don't know when I came to know it. One family gathering at an old home place. The house is gone, but the two fireplaces are still there. And my cousin looked from one fireplace to the other and said to me, I guess the question is not, did they have slaves, but how many did they have? And so I knew it. I'm seventh generation Southern on one side and eighth on the other. So I knew, I guess, probably since high school, maybe.
So what was your, first of all, why did you want to go to the opening of the memorial? And what was your reaction when you went?
The memorial is bringing to light this buried narrative, this hidden story that has shaped so much of our behavior and our actions. And, you know, those people are horrified by those postcards of people at these lynchings bringing their children and everything. But I think they forget that the lynchings were also a form of social control for white people. Because if you take a 7-year-old white child to a lynching, he's never going to make friends with a black child. It just reinforces the racial lines, and that was the purpose of it. And so when you have this memorial and you have all these people coming together in this sacred space, then we all come out of the lie and we're all able to be together. Hmm. It's hugely significant and powerful and healing.
I know it's a sensitive question, but can I ask you, when you talk to other members of your family about what you've discovered and what you've been thinking about all these years, what do they say?
Well, it's challenging for them, but I think they're proud of me, and I think we're all moving forward. I might be dragging some of my family, but we're all on a spectrum on where we are with this. As I say to them, I mean, I'm the first post-Civil Rights Movement generation. I was born in July of 63, so I'm the first generation who was actually taught that we're all equal. So I'm the first generation who's had the benefit of that being the norm.
What do you say to those who say, and you know, we hear it all the time, like, that was a long time ago. It has nothing to do with me. Mm-hmm. Black people need to get over it. You know, stop talking about slavery. Stop talking about Reconstruction. Stop talking about lynchings. That's just an excuse for not getting your act together, not going to school, not taking care of your kids. You know, and clearly
what I
people
say to
feel
that.
What do you say to
what
that?
What I say to that is the people who got their act together got lynched. I mean, it was an economic terrorism. One of the reasons people got lynched is that they were successful, economically competitive. We're looking at the aftermath of a very intentional campaign. And so we have to be very intentional in addressing that campaign, acknowledging it, and trying to move forward from here.
Margaret Rinkle was kind enough to talk to us from Montgomery, Alabama, where she's attending the opening of the National Memorial for Peace and Justice and the opening of the Legacy Museum. Her latest novel, Wash, came out in 2013. Margaret, thanks so much for talking to us.
Thank you, Michelle.
Context of White Supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Wednesday, May 9th, 2018. So I have been told. Our broadcast for today, this is the makeup. We were supposed to do this actually 2 weeks ago. We had to reschedule twice. Third time was the charm. In this instance, before I get to the information about today's broadcast, that segment on the lynching memorial that just opened in Alabama within the last few days, we've talked about it before. I have encouraged and will continue to do so. I know we have listeners in the Alabama area. If you all have the time, if you think it's worth your time and energy, make a report, make a visit. If you're close, if it's in within 30 minutes or an hour, I think that might be where, if I was in Alabama, if I lived within 30 minutes, an hour, I would make a trip. I would probably do at least one broadcast from there, regardless of what I thought about it. Just it's here. I'm going to check it out and do a counter-racist assessment. We would love to hear. You can write it up. You can come on the program and report, give your thoughts. That would be great. All that said, the portion in that segment where they said the white guest, where she said that these lynchings of black people, that this was a form of social control for white people, I vigorously disagree strongly. I cannot state it more emphatically. This is a subject matter that we've talked about on this program for a lot, nearly one decade of broadcasting. If you want to book specifically, Amy Louise Wood, Lynching and Spectacle. She was a guest on the program in 2016. We talked about that extensively, and I do not remember at all. This is a white female historian. I do not remember at all the primary reason behind lynchings and castrations of black people being, this is social control for white people. I remember it being exactly what her book said, lynching and spectacle. This is entertainment. Having whites collectively take part in the social ritual, the religion of white supremacy, which involves mutilating, butchering, castrating black people. That is exactly what I remember the thesis to be. And I think that is an act of racism. Anytime any white person starts talking incorrectly about racism, white supremacy, major suspicion, and that should be pointed out every time. That's it. Our broadcast for today. I've been practicing yoga since my residence flooded. It's been 5 months now. I've been talking about my yoga practice extensively, and even sometimes racism and yoga intersect directly. I've talked about that pretty much every pro. That's all we talk about now on the cows is Gus T's yoga practice. So I said, this was in February. I went to the yoga studio. First, when I first get there, I look, they have all the flyers for their coming events. So I look, flyers up. Deepening series, unpacking whiteness. It's going to go on for 6 weeks. I think, wow, I think I'll be here for this. I want to check this out. So I read, what is this all about? What is whiteness? What is white privilege? How can folks who identify as white become more aware of internalized racism and white supremacy in ourselves and the world? And how can our spiritual practice support white folks to courageously follow this inquiry without collapsing in shame and guilt? It goes on. It has more information, but I checked it out. I said, wow, this is amazing. For the host of the Context of White Supremacy, I definitely want to check it out and attend. I inquired about attending. I was not exactly welcomed with open arms, despite the flyer stating specifically, no people of color who wish to participate in this series will be turned away. Again, Gus T was not exactly welcomed with open arms. I didn't attend, but I thought, hey, I can just reach out to the facilitator, see if we can get her on the program, and that'll be the next best thing. And then listeners can hear about this deepening series on unpacking whiteness. The facilitator for this 6-week course, which just ended on April 4th, no doubt, that should be an important date for a lot of reasons. But for this course, the facilitator, she is a Seattle psychotherapist and facilitator. She's been practicing and studying the Dharma for over 20 years. She's passionate about bringing together tools for awakening and social justice. On top of all that, she is a mom. Joining us live from Seattle, Washington, my part of the world, our guest, Mrs. Anna Brown Griswold. Ms. Griswold, you're with us? Are you with us, ma'am? We're not hearing you. Ms. Griswold, are you there? Oh, let's see. Oh, got her. All right, we got you. Are you with us now?
Hey, yeah, right here.
Wonderful. So glad that we could have you on the program. We're able to reschedule a few times after
Thank
some
you.
Conflicts and what have you. For listeners, I'm sure for a lot of folks, this is their first time hearing about you. Anything that you would like to briefly share with our listeners about who you are, the work that you do?
Sure. I guess I'd first say, like, you know, in offering this course, it's not because I am an expert. If I have any expertise or anything to offer, it's like I'm trained as a psychotherapist. I'm trained in, you know, what's called behavioral sciences and then a long-term meditation practice. And I'm passionate about racial justice. I'm doing white supremacy to whatever degree I can. And so what I'm most curious about is how to bring tools to change white people's behavior. That's like what I'm interested in.
Fascinating. Okay. And you are classified as a white person?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, even before I get to the definitions and what have you, I'll ask, do you think that it's logical for me, a black male, or for any non-white person in the world, do you think it's logical for a non-white person to be suspicious of any white person, including yourself, that individual could be racist if they're classified as white? Do you think it's logical for a non-white person to have that suspicion?
Absolutely.
Of any white person, including yourself?
Oh, totally.
Okay.
Yeah.
Other quick question before I get to my definition, or I guess this is more of a, I can put it in the form of a question. I've concluded that one of the primary ways that people classified as white, like yourself, practice white supremacy racism is being deceptive, and particularly when having discussions with non-white people about white supremacy racism, which was what was happening in that audio clip. I forgot that the white person that was speaking was talking to a black person during the interview. I found that what happens consistently in those type of exchanges is that white people are not honest. It's not that they're guilty. It's not that they're shameful. It's that they are deliberately, willfully not using the most accurate words when describing or talking about this problem. When non-white people ask questions, they will not answer the question or use a lot of unnecessary words. On this broadcast, we'll say buckets and buckets of words. They'll take 5,000 words when the answer could have taken 20 words. And what it does is it promotes confusion and it wastes time. But I chalk all that is practicing racism. So to the best of your ability, can you make an effort to be efficient, precise, to make sure that you do actually answer the question and just as accurate and honest as you can be while speaking with us today?
Yes, totally. And I would say, if I'm doing otherwise, let me know. Let me know, and yeah.
We will do so. Listeners, you have been given permission to let her know if we think she could be practicing racism in how she's responding, being too wordy or not responding to the question. Mm-hmm. Okie doke. Definition. On this program, I ask all of our guests, I use the term racism and the term white supremacy. I use them as synonyms, and I use the same definition for both terms. The definition I use is as follows. A global system of people who classify themselves as white and are dedicated to abusing and or subjugating everyone in the known universe whom they classify as not white. Do you think such a system exists? Do you think that's an accurate definition?
Yeah, that I have no doubt such a system exists. Yeah. And I think it's really a close definition to the one that I use from a woman named Elizabeth Martinez. And she adds, and it's probably in there already in what you shared, but she says specifically for the purpose of maintaining and defending a system of wealth, power, and privilege. So kind of, to me, that gets at the like, exploitation dimension of white supremacy.
Okay. That's the definition that you use in your workshops and when you talk about white supremacy, racism on your time?
Yeah, I mean, the language is a little bit different. I'd be happy to share the language to use if you want, but it seems pretty similar.
Let's hear your definition.
Sure. And this isn't mine. I want to credit Elizabeth Martinez for this definition. She says, white supremacy is a historically based, institutionally perpetrated system of exploitation and oppression of continents, nations, and peoples of color by white people and nations for the purpose of maintaining and defending a system of wealth, power, and privilege.
Okay. Listeners can ponder on that. I emphasize the importance of making sure that there is a definition of racism and that people give their definition mm-hmm. so folks can process that, see what they think. If you have any questions about the definition, feel free. We'll have time for listeners to speak as well. Before I get to some of what you are attempting to do with your workshop, just your work as a psychotherapist, what do you do specifically?
So I specialize, or I should say my training is in primarily working with folks with trauma. And so a lot of the therapies that I'm trained in, everything from, say, what's called EMDR, I don't need to get into the acronyms too much, to something called schema therapy, something called DBT, are all treatments that work with trauma and the after effects. So I treat stuff across the spectrum, depression, anxiety, identity issues, but my core training has been in working with trauma.
Okay. I guess does this involve prescribing medications or how do you?
No.
Okay.
No. I have a master's degree and I work as a psychotherapist, but I don't have an MD, so I don't prescribe medication or stuff like that.
Okay. So what's your therapeutic approach?
So I would say, I would say my therapeutic approach is always looking through two lenses. One is context. What has been the social, the familial, the economic context of what my client has experienced in their life, right? So that I don't see their mental health stuff as merely like individual. I see it as most often, at minimum an interaction, that most often a result of what's occurred in their environment. And not just their environment in their family, but their environment in their neighborhood, their environment in this country, in the context of white supremacy, in the context of patriarchy, in the context of all kinds of oppression and exploitation. I'm always kind of like looking through that frame. That was a part of my training. And I'd say the other piece I'm looking through is like, what happened as someone was growing up? What of their kind of like core needs were met, what wasn't met, what experiences of trauma, neglect, something called adverse childhood experiences, which is the kind of technical name for that, have they experienced? and what has that, what's the result of that been for them?
Very interesting. One of our guests, she's a psychiatrist. She would frequently say that her job and the job of the psychiatrist is to help their patients accept reality even when they are afraid of doing so. That came to mind when you were giving your first, the first part of your approach in terms of understanding context that, you know, brought whatever behaviors are being, problems or behaviors are being addressed. You being in the Seattle, Washington area, I would assume that a lot of your clients would have to be white, but you can get in trouble for making assumptions. What's, if you can share, like, the racial demographics of your clients?
Yeah, I would say right now, and it's different, I just got back from maternity leave, so my practice is pretty small right now. I'd say maybe 70% white, 75% white. Been different at different times. And I'm pretty clear with folks who are, you know, people of color and non-white who choose to work with me, you know, to, as a white person, having to name and acknowledge my own racism, concern about the impact of that on therapeutic treatment, getting that out in the room, you know, but here's the context.
When you has that happened before? Like you had a non-white client and you have some sort of conversation with them like, hey, I'm a white person. I'm acknowledging my own race. You've had that sort of conversation with a non-white client before?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Can you, what does that conversation sound like?
I mean, it depends on how the person responds, you know? So there's not like a template for how anyone's going to respond, but I more want to like acknowledge like, hey, I am a white woman. And my best guess is you've probably had some form of one way or another traumatic experience with a white woman. Despite me saying, like, I'm working on my own racism, you know, it's here, you know. So how do you want to work with me? You know, do you still want to work with me? Here's what I'm skilled at. Here's what I'm not. Really wanting to give people, like, what in our profession is called informed consent. Like, are they consenting based on all the information to work with me?
Fascinating. That's something we've talked about on the broadcast as well, getting particularly mental health assistance or any sort of healthcare from a white healthcare practitioner that can be medical apartheid. Top five, Harriet Washington. Mm-hmm. Oh, you've read Harriet. Are you familiar with her work?
Just very, very superficially. It's something I want to read more of.
Okay. Again, our guest, Mrs. Anna Brown Griswold, Context of White Supremacy, talking a little bit about your practice. How did, from this practice of psychotherapy, and particularly you being in the Seattle, Washington area, you just said your clients, about 70% of your clients classified as white. How did that move to you addressing racism, white supremacy, and even, you know, a workshop specifically to address racism?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's sort of a little more history for me of having grown up in New York City, I've been in Seattle for a while, 10 years. So I grew up in New York City, and then I was sort of bounced around a little, and then went to school in the Bay Area, lived in Oakland for a while, and then moved to Seattle 10 years ago. And so definitely, I would say, had the privilege to learn from some people who I hugely respect about systems of racism and white supremacy, I would say in a less predominantly white city than Seattle, you know. Whatever education I have been lucky to have, it wasn't primarily here, although there are people doing amazing work here in Seattle. What was the second part of your question? How did I come to do this work here?
Right. Just how did you, from your work in psychotherapy, get to doing work addressing racism, white supremacy?
Yeah. So I think, you know, basically since I was in my late teens, early 20s, it's something that I felt passionate about, trying to educate myself about, trying to work on my own racism. And then, so about 10 years ago, I started grad school in, or no, maybe 12 years ago in psychology, and went through that and was like, there are a lot of problems with psychology. It's not saying that it's not wrought with white supremacy racism too, but there are also pretty specific tools for behavioral change. You know, so like so much of what I work with my own clients is in a way like technologies of how to help people change what they're doing, how they're thinking, what they're doing, how they experience things, how they act in the world. And so I was kind of like, wow, well, why aren't we using these kind of technologies, psychological, you know, behavioral science technologies to change how white folks are acting around racism? So that kind of like brought that together for me. And I've been practicing Buddhist meditation for about 25 years. And in the Buddhist group that I was a part of, starting to basically address race and racism in those groups. They're called sanghas, or in those groups, and try and use some of the, not just psychotherapy tools, but spiritual tools to address it. So having kind of worked in my own like small circles with them, just sort of evolved from there. Does that answer your question, Beth?
It does. I will certainly have more as we proceed, but kind of, at least for listeners, for really any non-white person, regardless of what you think about my views or Mrs. Anna Brown Griswold's views, that a very important question that I think every non-white person should process and come to a conclusion on: what does it mean to be classified as white? Very important question. And at least in my view, it's very important to come to an answer, an accurate answer to that question, before moving to how do we solve the problem of racism, white supremacy, and specifically, what are our expectations of white people? Very important to have an answer to that first question: what does it mean to be classified as white? Really getting to that. This is one of those where I said before, where you can ask white people a question and they will give you 10,000 words for an answer that could maybe be given in 20 words, where I say that's a major act of racism, white supremacy, because it tends to cause confusion. If you could give us this one efficiently, in your view, what does it mean to be classified as white?
The first thing that comes to mind is to be classified as white means a huge array of privileges that come at the expense of people of color, non-white people. Whether that's in education or in economic terms or in criminal justice or in just walking down the street, you know, it's like with this classification comes this huge privilege. That's the first thing that comes to mind. There's definitely more, but yeah.
That's one, that P word. Well, I'll ask a question even before. Do you think it's it's most accurate in a system of white supremacy, racism, where individuals classified as white dominate in all areas of people activity worldwide? Do you think it's more accurate to say that white people have privilege, or more accurate to say that white people have power?
Power. Yeah, that's a good point.
I've concluded the same thing. I brought that up over the years. I know Dr. Peggy McIntosh, she's often credited with the white privilege vernacular. She's a guest on the program. I think she practiced white supremacy. And the interesting thing is that Dr. Peggy McIntosh has more recent literature published. That white privilege nonsense, racism, is like decades old. In her more recent literature, she has a bold-faced sentence that says white people should be more willing to use the word white supremacy, not white privilege. She totally ignored that. Even she ignored her own work practicing racism, in my view, when she was on the program to stick with white privilege. But in my view, the pattern, this is not even a one-time, like this is just an Anna Brown Griswold. Predictably, when we have individuals classified as white, doesn't matter if they're in their 20s, teens, 30s, 80s, hundreds, what part of the world, very comfortable with privilege, very comfortable giving long lists of the type of privilege that they have to be able to move to cool places like Seattle with an astronomical cost of living and hang out and do cool things like go to yoga and have workshops. They can list that for eons. I can drive drunk and not be stopped by police or be escorted home. The question, how do you practice racism, white supremacy, that's when the crickets come out. And that, in my view, really gets to the essence of what does it mean to be white? Not, I just get these goodies and it's dumped on me. That makes it a very passive thing, as if whites are just hanging out and this is just dumped on me and I didn't ask. And that's not how this works at all. In fact, getting to the verb of the matter, to that question that I asked, that I don't, and I, in my view, that would be an act of racism, white supremacy, I suspect, on the part of our guest, Mrs. Anna Brown Griswold, because I think I've taken a totally different perspective. White people aren't ignorant about racism. White people can't be ignorant about racism. We've had some white people that have gotten right to the crux of what it means to be white in about 5 seconds, no flinching. So I'll ask a more different, I'll ask a different question to really get back to the question I asked previously. What does it mean to be white? Can you cite some time, some specific examples of how you have practiced racism?
Yeah, I think a couple of things come to mind. Actually something from just recently. Give me a sec because it takes me a little while to put words together sometimes. Economically, that I have not engaged in work around reparations is an act of white supremacy. Economic reparations. That's clear to me. I'm also just kind of scanning through like my last few weeks. And if you want to respond to that, go for it, Gus. Fine. Thinking.
While you're thinking, I'll just state this for listeners. That's it's so stark when I've talked to white people and you almost have to muzzle them to get them to stop talking about the different types of quote unquote white privilege that they have. When you, and I mean, talking to white people that are not like 10, we're not talking to a white person that's 20, to say, well, list some ways that you've practiced racism, and consistently white people cannot think, or it's a struggle to think of any. That to me is stark and suspicious, that can't think of any times where you've practiced racism, white supremacy. Omission is a big one as well, because I know there are snitching. That is going to be the new campaign on the cows. Whites, not black people, are the worst at the no snitch policy, because whites watch other white people practice racism all the time and they don't snitch. And I would be willing to wager quite a bit you have been in the presence of another white person who practiced racism and you didn't do anything. Am I being incorrect?
You know, it's interesting. I so appreciate you saying this, because it's like, I am sure that I have. And one of my commitments is naming it. So, kind of like, yeah, naming it when I see it, when it's uncomfortable. So, this one springs right to mind. Is one of my cousins is from Baltimore. And we were talking, like, gone out to dinner, he was visiting. And he said, oh, you know, no one lives in Baltimore anymore. And I was like, what? What are you talking about? You mean the white people live where you used to live in Baltimore? That's what you're saying. And he, you know, got upset with me saying that. Yeah. So that kind of naming it when I see and experience it. And I'm not saying that I am perfect at that. I can make no claims to being perfect, and it's an important commitment to me, for sure. You know, naming that racism when I see it.
Context of white supremacy. Want to make sure I emphasize those two points quickly about the no snitching. Again, it's individuals like Anna Brown Griswold. It's whites. That is a major part of the racist code, not snitching on other whites who practice white supremacy racism. That comes up all the time, all areas of people activity, hiring, loans, across the board where this is happening. And whites don't snitch on other whites. And then they have the audacity to promote that black people are about some no snitch campaign. That's number one. Number two, the experts on white supremacy racism are individuals like Anna Brown Griswold, who are classified as white. Do not be mistaken or confused and think, oh, wow, Gus really knows it. No, that is not what this is at all. No white person needs help from Gus or any other Negro on the plantation to figure out what racism is, or even to list different ways that it operates, even ways that they themselves practice racism, white supremacy. Again, I go back to why I asked that question about suspicion to begin with. That's, there should be interrogation with suspicion about, really, are we being as accurate and honest as possible, even when we're talking about ourselves and white people, excuse me, when we're talking about whites and how they are complicit in upholding, practicing white supremacy racism. Has, at any point that you can recall, has a non-white person ever suspected you of practicing white supremacy racism?
Yeah, I'm sure. And something's coming to mind right now. Yeah.
Can you think of a specific incident?
Yeah, yeah. So this person's a friend of mine now, and we were on a Buddhist retreat together. And we were in a small group together, and she told me later, when once we'd become friends, she was like, I totally thought you were, you know, just this, like, what were her words? Like this little white girl who had everything perfect and got what you wanted, and were just perpetuating, I assumed you were going to just contribute to perpetuating how things are here.
I guess you said you all are friends, so I guess she doesn't feel that way now?
I'm guessing, I mean, from what she says, she doesn't feel that way anymore.
Hmm. Fascinating. I'll just put a pin there. I'll see if we have time. I'll maybe come back to that because I do want to get to the workshop. With the workshop, again, titled Deepening Series, Unpacking Whiteness. I know sometimes the yoga studio might have picked the title. Or you, who picked the title? Was that a collaborative effort?
The yoga studio, I would say my preference would be something like Unpacking White Supremacy, Challenging White Supremacy, like putting white supremacy up front would be my inclination. Yeah.
Okay. Was this the first time that you had done this workshop, or had you done this type of thing before?
It's the first time I had done this workshop. So I'd done like some pieces of the exercises we'd done before in different contexts, just as part of a team of facilitators or in a group, but I'd never done, this was the first time I was like putting this all together, a 6-week curriculum and doing that. Yeah.
Okay. It's on the flyer. I told listeners when I saw the flyer, $110, which, and I guess I should also include, this series was intended for white people. That is written specifically on the flyer. This series is intended for people who identify as white, although, as I said before, it does include if you're not, or person of color, it says. If you're interested in coming, you will not be turned away. When I spoke with one of the folks who I think helped put this on at the yoga studio, they were talking about, I guess, movies that were recommended or maybe even clips from different films that were shown in the class. Mm-hmm. Like, what were some of the things on the syllabus for the 6-week course?
Sure. I kind of pulled from all over the place because there wasn't time to, like, watch the whole thing, say, like, the movie series, the 3-hour series, Race, Power of an Illusion, or History of Slavery, or there are a bunch of movies that I just took like clips from. So I would be happy to just send you the whole list because there's so many, it's probably too many to name right here. But everything from, yeah, I'm just trying to think, images from the Atlanta Black Star to clips from, yeah, Race, Power of an Illusion, the movie History of Slavery, to, yeah, a bunch of others too. But I'd be happy if you want me to kind of say the like overview of the class, I'd be happy to do that.
Oh, sure. If you could email me the syllabus, I'd love to check that out. I'm sure some listeners would be curious about that as well. But yeah, if you want to give us kind of a quick overview of what was supposed to be the intended goal of the course, that would be great too.
Yeah. So for me, I would say, like, the intended goal is to both educate white folks that the U.S. as a country was built on Native genocide and chattel slavery, and then the theft of land from Mexico, and that it's not like racism or white supremacy was secondary. It's not like it was an add-on. It was from the beginning of this country threaded in was a system of white supremacy that was built. And to give people that context, you know, to kind of like break down this myth. And then from there, so it was like a couple weeks of history, then looking specifically at like white folks' behavior in a individual way, so-called microaggressions, we just say aggressions, the concept of white fragility, how to work internally with that, and then looking at how do we build a culture of outrage about this, and at the same time learn how to acknowledge and change our behavior. So that's a big goal, but if there was even any, I'm hoping for just even a drop in the bucket on that.
We do talk about metaphors on this program, drop in the bucket indeed. If I'm understanding correctly, in terms of the main objectives, primary objectives from this course, the deepening series, unpacking whiteness, to educate white people about the fact that white supremacy, the system of white supremacy, is the foundation of this country, this part of the world, genocide of non-white people, all of that, to educate them about that, and then to change white people's behavior. I come back to what I said before, and this is major, and in fact, Gus T. personally has written dozens of articles for Atlanta Black Star. One of them includes Why White People Can't Be Ignorant About Racism. And this is one if we have any newer listeners, non-white people, I'm really only talking to non-white people. This is kind of a big one. This is heavily promoted, the notion that non-white people, black people, are experts on racism and that white people don't have to think about racism. White people don't know about racism. They just don't think about these concepts or ideas. And I'm saying that is astronomically false. It is dangerous, in fact, to think that way. I'm saying, I'll just say it again, people like Anna Brown Griswold, they are the experts, PhD experts on white supremacy racism, not Gus T, not any other black person in the known universe, not any other non-white person. I don't care how many PhDs they have, books they have published. Again, all of this is based on if you are white, you cannot be ignorant about racism. I go back to those lynching photos that you showed. In my view, that right there, you cannot tell me that if we're having group mass lynchings where thousands of whites attend, and this happened all across the country for decades, how can you be white? We're going to lynch the nigger at 10 a.m. It's on the front page of the paper. Be there. We're going to barbecue him. Get a piece of his finger. How can you be ignorant about what they've got signs up? No niggers at this water fountain. That's recent. You don't have to go way, way back. Yeah, that's like 1960s history where they've got signs up, whites only. How can you possibly be white and be ignorant about racism? That is rhetorical, but I am asking you that question.
Yeah, and I think it's a totally valid one. Like, how could that be, right? How is that possible? What happens that, you know, I was listening to this thing today. Hopefully this isn't too much. This is, I think it's on track. Where the person was saying that to be Black in America is to be in a constant state of mourning. And then they said, well, what is it to be white in America? And the first thing I thought of was, is to be numb. Because to do this much damage, to do the level of damage that white people do, you can't stay human without going numb. Because when we hurt other people, I mean, this is more like a spiritual belief I have, when we hurt other people, we feel it. And there's psychological research on this too. Unless we go numb. And I'm like, wow, what is this, like, numbness? This, and I'm not saying that is the only quality, but it's certainly one that I see a lot among white folks. You know, it's this kind of, like, turning away, denial, numbness.
You're just saying just buckets and buckets of words.
Context of white supremacy. That would be one, particularly with the question that was asked about how white people can be ignorant about racism. When I say metaphors, to me, that is a metaphor. And the metaphor doesn't even process someone being numb. I have no idea what that means in the context of a question about someone having understanding about the practice of white supremacy racism. That's why I said there should be like really close inspection when you're asking white people questions, because this, I've just found this to be the tendency. The response is frequently they are not logical. They don't make sense. Frequently, they're not even responding to the question that was asked. And this is a key one. I mean, imagine if we were sitting in 1960, they still got signs up. No niggers can use this water fountain, saying that explicitly, or whites only. How then can you have someone tell you that white people, they don't know what racism is? They don't think about racism. Who put the sign up? Are they illiterate? Can they not read the sign? That's not what's happening here. Hang on a second. That's not what's happening here at all. And I'm telling you that any individual on this earth or elsewhere, since they got Elon Musk in there, you know, heading out to wherever in the great, what I said at the beginning, known universe. Any individual classified as white in the known universe, our guest included, who is saying, promoting, suggesting anything that suggests that whites don't understand or need to be informed, educated about white supremacy racism, that right there is the act, the practice, the refined practice of white supremacy racism, in my opinion. And again, just to make sure that folks, non-white listeners, have a clear example. In my view, a white person who is ignorant about racism, what that would look like is every single black person that goes to the bank that day gets a loan approved. That's what a white person who's ignorant about racism would look like. Every single black person that goes to fill out an employment application, they get hired that day. When other whites come, what in the world? Who hired all these niggers? How did they all get here? What is going on? What do you mean? What's a nigger? I just hired him. He came in. It was great. That's what a white person who is ignorant about white supremacy racism would look like. I don't see that happening anywhere in the known universe. Am I talking crazy, Miss Anna Brown Griswold? And feel free, if I'm not being logical, let me know.
No, that makes sense to me. I'm like, I have some more thoughts, but I'm like, yeah. Like, if there then, and that's a good example of, like, if you think that that white person has no understanding of race or racism, then why is there, you know, almost a study, it was like someone with a quote-unquote black-sounding name, they did a submitting a resume versus a white-sounding name, was rejected like 70% more of the time. It's because there's racism.
No, it's, in my view, it's because white people can't be ignorant about racism. And I'm just pointing out, Miss Anna Brown Griswold, she could have brought that up before. That's what I said. Like, whites, in my view, in my experience, they have done far more reading on these subject matters. I bump into way more whites who have read these type of studies, and they know about the black sounding names and racist employment practices, medical apartheid. I didn't hear about that book from a black person. It was a white Seattleite, a white woman, no less, who said, gosh, you should get medical apartheid. I think you would like it. It's great. It just took a while for us to get it on the program. Back to the whitening series. What they said, I was told by one of the participants, white woman, that lynching photos were showed and that you all did meditation around the photos and thinking about what was the whites who were present, the individual complicity with the system of racism and maybe even these lynchings that happened, you know, decades before they were even born. What was the response to the showing of these lynching photographs?
You know, I think at first it was horror, you know, like, and I guess one of the, I'll even send you one of the photos if you want to see it, because there's a little bit like you were talking about before, like, in one of the photos, here you see this man's mutilated freaking body. And then you look at the white people below, and there's like a crowd, including kids, and they look like it is a picnic. And it is so messed up. Like, what was going on in those people's minds? What level of distortion? And frankly, from my perspective, like, pathology was happening, that they did that, and they were acting like it was a freaking picnic.
And so the people, the whites that were present in the class, you said it was, I guess, horror. And did it move to complicit? Did that make anyone say, wow, you know, I too have participated, maybe not in this sort of lynching, but I too am practicing, yeah, participating in white supremacy racism myself. Did that happen?
Yeah, that was more sort of like a lead into how do each of us do this now? Right? What's our version of this now? How are we complicit now in the same way? How, what can we find in our own behavior now about this kind of thing? You know, it probably looks different, but what's the thread?
Were there responses in terms of how whites, including yourself, are doing this now? What were some of the responses?
Yeah, I mean, I can speak for myself. I'm honestly forgetting what some of the other folks said, but even something like calling the police, you know, because in this system of white supremacy, if there's police are called, that can be, you know, not even can be, often is life-threatening for non-white people, you know? So, like, if I've called the police, what was going on? What was my complicity? What was my enactment of white supremacy that I would do that? It could put someone else's life in danger.
Was that one of the ways that someone cited, like calling the police on?
that was my example. Yeah.
Okay. Is that something that you yourself have done, calling the police on a non-white person, or was that just a hypothetical example that you were giving the group?
It was an experience when I was in college. Yeah.
Was it a justified reason? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, it's one, you know, it's complex. It's something I regret, you know. So it may have, like, justified was the person making threats towards me? Yeah. Physical threats? Yeah. Would I try and find a really different pathway now? Yes. You know? So, yeah, was there a threat of violence against me? Yeah. Yeah. And still, I would really question whether I would make that same choice. Yeah.
That was not lost on Gusty, even though it was a few moments back. And you said it's been a few weeks. This, the final workshop was on August 4th, and the series started back in February. So it's been about a month since all of this concluded. Even with that, and I don't have the best memory either as a victim of white supremacy, based on how infrequently I hear whites acknowledge complicity with regards to white supremacy racism, I'm pretty sure if a white person had said anything that was worth a grain of sand metaphor, I would have remembered what they said. That to me suggests strongly that maybe they didn't say anything very worthwhile. I could be wrong. I wasn't there. But and in fact, I do want to say something about that before I get our callers. This is the exact way, the play-by-play. It says again on the flyer, no people of color who wish to participate in this series will be turned away. I don't know if that was your encouragement or was that the yoga studio?
It was. That was my encouragement.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's good to know. Now, I went and requested, and I said, I've been to series like this before. I do work on racism, white supremacy, hosting this broadcast right here. I would love to be in attendance. The response was not, we said on the flyer, no people of color will be turned away. Come on in. It was, I don't know. How much do you want to pay? $110. I said that before. And I said, pay? What do you mean pay? I'm a victim of white supremacy. Why do I have to pay to attend a workshop, which is the exact same thing I had done for a workshop in the very month of February? I was in Queen Anne. They had a white ally workshop at a church on Queen Anne on a Saturday morning. I gave up my yoga practice and went out to the workshop. It was supposed to be $25. I told them the exact same thing I said for your workshop. Why on earth would a black person be charged to attend such a workshop? And they said, yeah, you're right. Come on in for free. That's not what happened here. They said, how much do you want to pay? I said, zero. What are you talking about? And they said, oh, I don't know. We'll have to convene with the Council of Elders. I'm being facetious, but that's what they said. We'll have to convene with, I guess they have some sort of team who helps put on these type of things, and we'll see what they say. From that moment, I lost all, that was everything I needed to hear. If it's all of that, you should have just put that, I'm not talking about you specifically, but that should have been included on the flyer to just say, we'll have to convene our Council of Elders if a non-white person wants to attend and not pay $110 or whatever ghastly fee we want to put on this workshop, ask and we'll see if we can hook you up. Not no person, or excuse me, no people of color who wish to participate in this series will be turned away. When I see those type of shenanigans, it says that just confirms everything that I've said from the beginning. White people are not going to stop practicing racism. This stuff generally is a waste of time, and whites do a lot of deception with words. Can you give a response to this?
Yeah, no, I'm like, I hear you. I wish that I'd been the one to field that question, and I wish that I'd been the one to be like, of course, come. Yeah. Totally. You know? I hear not that. You know?
Context of white supremacy. Again, our guest, Mrs. Anna Brown Griswold. If folks have questions on what we've been discussing, the workshop specifics, the number 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. One other point that came up from your workshop that I did not get to attend. One white woman, yoga instructor, she attended your practice. I don't know if she was there for all six, but she was there for at least a portion of it. She gave us, she taught a Saturday class, and she began the practice talking about some of what she learned. She did use the term white supremacy, but her major point in a class, I was in attendance, so obviously everybody present was not white. Her major point was that white supremacy harms white people, and she wanted us to meditate around that. I absolutely refused, and in fact, I got up and began doing chaturangas. I told listeners about this because I was stunned. She meditated for about 5 minutes. For people who don't know, chaturangas are, think of like doing a push-up, basically. I don't want to get into all the, like doing a push-up, basically. You're doing push-ups. It's more mobile, moving around. You'll work up a sweat if you do that for 5 minutes. I worked up a sweat while they were meditating because I was so furious that, again, a white, in my view, a white person practicing racism. This is what you had. This is the main thing that you learned from a workshop on white supremacy is not even white privilege. Not even white privilege is that white supremacy harms white people in a class where not everybody present is white. What are your thoughts?
I'm just like, oh no, that is so bad. Yeah, ouch. I do occasionally add in research from a person on the East Coast who talks about the basically cost of oppression to the people who are oppressing. The only reason I ever even say that is to say, try and get leverage for people to change. That is like the last thing on the list, right? The core, it's like the last thing on the list, you know? So I feel really concerned that that would have been presented as primary in any way. And concerns like, well, what have I done wrong that was any kind of takeaway, you know? Because when I do put that in as kind of a footnote, it's like, wow, how am I going to get white folks to change their behavior? Well, maybe if I show them that it's in their not in their interest to continue this, that'll change. But that's the only reason for it.
This again, I've seen this as a pattern. This is not something just with people who've taken your workshop specifically. I see this as a pattern. And the reason that I see this as also a major problem and an act of white supremacy racism when I hear any individual classified as white talking about white people being harmed or also being victims of white supremacy. We had this conversation with Tim Wise, admitted racist, a few years back on the broadcast, is that I consider white supremacy racism a crime. I've never heard anyone tell me that it's not. I cannot think of any other crime. Like, I don't hear people sitting around talking about Bill Cosby and saying, man, Bill Cosby was also harmed by practicing sexual assault. I haven't heard that yet. I don't hear any other crime where people sit around and talk about the perpetrator as also being harmed by the crime that they carried out. That is highly, in fact, the only time that I hear that logic employed is when we're talking about white supremacy, racism, and now somehow white people are victims of that too. That is absurd. Ooh, it is an act.
I would never say victim.
Well, and it's not the same thing. If we're saying victim or if we're saying that white people are being harmed, yeah, in my view, it's the same thing. I do not hear the perpetrator being talked about as a victim or someone who was harmed by the crime that they carried out. Can you think of another example where people talk about how the perpetrator was harmed by their own crime?
Yeah, so I can, just because I have some friends who do a practice called restorative justice. And so I guess it's often talked about in that context, you know, like in terms of patriarchy or sexual assault of women, or in talking about like how women are oppressed. So there's a folks I know who are men who say, well, how are men harmed by patriarchy too? What's the cost to men of sexually assaulting women? But I know that's not mainstream. I know that's probably a small context where I hear it, just because I know folks involved in that practice. So I do hear it there.
I have yet to hear someone. I've heard people talk about patriarchy and Bill Cosby. I have not heard one conversation where it's, wow, Bill Cosby is also harmed by. If you find that article, that link, or Kevin Spacey, any of those folks, let me hear it. Let me read it. Bill O'Reilly is also harmed by the sexual assault that he's been accused of. Donald Trump is also harmed by the patriarchy. That if you find that article, that video, that sound clip, send it to Gus T. Renegade, untiljustice at gmail.com. I will check some of our listeners to see if they have questions for our guest, Anna Brown Griswold, here in Seattle with Gus T. Renegade. Person that dialed in, let's see. Retired firefighter. If you had a question for our guest, your line should be open.
Greetings. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings to the guest. I have, I'm going to go with at least two questions. Number one, have you ever given aid or comfort or engaged in sexual intercourse and or sexual play with a white person whom you knew mistreated or refused to give constructive help to a non-white person?
I gotta kind of scroll back on that one. I've been with my partner for a long time, so I gotta think back to other people.
Is that long of a list?
It's honestly, it's just a long, long time ago. So that's why I'm thinking about it. I think so. Someone I dated many years ago. My guess is that. If I had to guess, I didn't know for sure at the time, but I think after I was like, suspicious.
Have you ever engaged in sexual intercourse with a non-white person?
Yes.
Do, under the global system of racism, white supremacy, having sexual intercourse with a non-white person, do you consider that to be constructive or non-constructive?
I don't want
to. And if so, if it's constructive, can you give me an answer on why? And if it's not constructive, give me an answer for why.
You know, it's honestly not. It was a long time ago, and it was a complicated relationship, and so I don't feel like I have enough experience to say. Like, it's something I would definitely want to think about and check out and read about and think about that experience. But I don't feel like I have enough experience either personally or with research to give a really good answer on.
What part of the question that you're not experienced on?
Just whether it's constructive or not constructive. You know, if I think back to that relationship many years ago, I haven't gone back and asked him how it was, you know, was it constructive or not constructive for him? I would want to know.
No, I was asking you, so you don't have to bother to think about the other person. You played a part in the encounter, I would figure. So what is your analysis? Was it something constructive or non-constructive? And give me a reasoning on why on either one or both.
But constructive for me or constructive for him?
Constructive for the non-white person.
I guess that's where I'm like, I don't know. I would need to ask him if it was constructive for him or not. Like, I don't feel like I can talk for him.
Right now I'm not asking you to talk for I'm asking what your thoughts are, because obviously, by having sexual intercourse, you had a reason for doing it. You were aware the person was non-white, correct?
Yeah, you
were aware that that there's a system of racist white supremacy, correct?
Yeah, I would take two.
Okay, well, that's the only thing you need to answer the question.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I lived in a country where I was, it was a primarily non-white country. I was a white person living there. Really.
Excuse me, ma'am. Could you stay on course? Because logically speaking, is there another country that actually exists other than the global system of racism, white supremacy?
Sorry, you cut out there for a second. I couldn't hear you.
Is there any other country that actually exists other than the global system of racism, white supremacy?
No.
Okay. I'm not interested in any map designation on where you were at within the known universe. I just want to know the answer to my question about do you think having sex with a non-white person is constructive? Under a global system of white supremacy. That's the only question I'm asking you.
Yeah, no, I'm totally thinking about it right now. And I'm like, I'm thinking back to that situation, that time. It was 25 years ago.
You don't even have to go back and remember exactly what you did. The question could be answered right now. Logically speaking, I would assume.
Yeah, if I think about it now, I would have concerns about power dynamics.
What was the last thing?
I said if it was now, I would have worries about power dynamics.
You would say you would have worry?
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean, ma'am?
It means that I would wonder whether it was constructive or not.
You would wonder if it's constructive.
Yeah. Yeah. It would make me pause. It would make me
It's possible that it's not constructive.
Totally.
Would it be possible that it would also judge you as a racist, not a racist suspect?
Sorry, you cut out there for a second. I couldn't hear you.
Is it possible that it also would indict you as being a racist, not a racist suspect?
I need to think about that. Possibly.
Thank you to the guests and to the host.
Appreciate that, retired firefighter in Florida. Caller, I know one of the questions, but I'll be quiet. Our mother in Michigan, if you had a question for Anna Brown Griswold, line should be open.
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Good evening, Gus, and to the guests and all the callers and listeners. I have two questions. The first question is, who do you think is most confused about racism, white supremacy? White people or non-white people, and why?
That's a great question. I feel like I can't really speak for non-white people. Now, you know, being a white person, I don't want to make any assumptions or speak for non-white people. That said, I think what I mean by confused, I'm going to use more as like destructive. I think white folks are by far most destructive in a system of white supremacy. No comparison.
You were breaking up a little bit. You said you feel that they are most, what was that?
Destructive.
Destructive? What do you mean by destructive?
I mean like causing the most harm. I mean, like, inflicting harm on other people, on non-white people.
Okay. But did you say you didn't know who was most confused? You work with mostly white people with your practice, correct?
Yeah, and I would say I work with mostly white people, and I just don't want to make an assumption about non-white folks.
Well, just based off of your interaction, with the white people, let's just say that you work with, and then the non-white people that you encounter, I'm assuming you talk about racism a lot. You know, this is something that comes up. So who do you think, just based off of your conversations, your interactions, is most confused about racism, white people or non-white people? It's not about making an assumption, just your experience.
Yeah, totally. I think white people and non-white people in a different way.
Okay. My next question, final question, actually. What do you mentioned earlier when Gus asked how do you practice racism? And you said economically you don't contribute to reparations or something to that effect. But I kind of wanted to go back to that question. Like, what do you do specifically to practice racism, like today? Like, what did you do today, if anything, or yesterday? I mean, not like far back, you know, you've given examples way back, but like recently, as of today and yesterday, what do you do specifically to practice racism?
Okay. Just getting back to my day.
Everybody still there?
I'm just trying to, I'm thinking about my day today and kind of like where I went, what I did. For me, it's also what I didn't do. So actually, this is yesterday. So in Seattle, there was a big kind of demonstration led by Indigenous women to shut down Chase Make for basically funding destruction of Native land. And I was tired and sick, and still, I didn't go. And to me, that was practicing white supremacy, to not contribute to solidarity and speaking out against this destruction. You know? So when I think about, like, I think I overly let myself off the hook. You know, it's going to be like, go anyway. You feel sick, you feel tired, do that. It's more important. Go. You know? That's one that comes to mind.
Okay. If I can slide one more question in, I promise be the last one.
Okay.
Has anyone ever, are non-white people suspicious of you of being a racist?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right. Thanks for answering my questions, and thanks for taking my call, Gus.
Yeah. Thank you.
Indeed. Context of white supremacy. Number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you have a question. Ivy, you have a question for Anna Brown Griswold. Your line should be open.
Yes, sir. Greetings, Gus. Greetings to the callers on the line and to the guests. Did you say Ms. Griswold?
Yes, yes.
Okay. I have two questions. The first one is, given that if Gus called the police on you, it could result in his death.
Yeah.
How can patriarchy, sexism, all of that, how can that exist when that is the case?
Yeah, that is a great question, you know, because it's like intersectional, because there were like racism and sexism. So, for instance, if a white man called the police on me, he would not be in danger. But Gus, as a black man, would be, right? No question. So it's not like, you know, sometimes one is more in the front, you know? So my best guess is if the police were called and it was me and Gus and I'm like a small white lady, he would be in a lot of danger, right? And in that case, racism and white supremacy is what's running the show. That said, if I was in a situation where a white man called the police on me for whatever, that white man would not be in danger at all. In fact, they'd probably be way, way more likely to believe whatever he's saying than whatever I'm saying. So that's where sexism or patriarchy would be running the show.
Well, what I don't understand about your answer is that you are only indicting one group of men. That's not sexism. Because if it's sexism, then that would be all men. So again, how can sexism, as it is defined, and patriarchy be in existence as it is defined, if there are a group of men who do not and cannot subjugate women? And I don't know of any evidence that non-white men, that they subjugate and are subject to, that any women are subject to any non-white men. So again, how can sexism and patriarchy exist as it is defined if we're only talking about one group of men who are in control?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. That's why I would say white supremacist patriarchy to make that point, right? Because it's not talking about all men. Like when you say white supremacist patriarchy, it's not talking about it's qualifying the patriarchy with the white supremacy.
Okay. I still don't see how sexism and patriarchy exist if, you know, there are men who are not in control. But moving on to my next question. You talked about the ignorance of white people and how you're trying to educate them. Do you know of any other person or group or anything of that nature who dominate and yet they're ignorant? And if not, could it be that you are propagating ignorance among white people to confuse non-white people and to keep the system going by reducing non-white people's resistance to the system because they believe you that you guys are ignorant?
Yeah, I want to make sure I've got the question. So, okay for me to repeat it back to you?
I'm sorry?
I said I want to make sure I understand the question. So basically it's like, are there other situations where people who are oppressing other people are ignorant about that situation?
Well, it is a two-part question. It doesn't have to be oppression. It could be anything. It could be LeBron James with basketball, just anyone dominating in any area that where they're dominating and they're ignorant, other than racism, because I only hear this, just like Gus said, I only hear this with racism.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think it's comparable, but definitely there are people who talk about men dominating women without really knowing what they're doing. So men that I've talked to, particularly white men who I've spoken to about domination, say statistics like, you know, 95% of sexual assaults are committed by men against women, you know, something like that. And they have said after a conversation that they hadn't really understood their own domination of women before. They kind of got it and they kind of didn't. And then after they understood much more about how they were, in fact, dominating women.
Excuse me, ma'am. Could God kill you with impunity?
Sorry. Could you say that again? I couldn't. You cut out for a second.
Would Gus be allowed to kill you with impunity?
No.
So just killing somebody or just raping somebody, how is that domination? Wouldn't the domination be with impunity? Like this domination that you're talking about, or, you know, non-white men raping white women with impunity? So how are they dominating just because they're stronger than you and can rape you?
Oh, no, the black men are not dominated. I'm saying if white men say rape a white woman, which happens all the time, and there is no punishment, they can do it with total impunity. There's something about that where oftentimes they are not aware of the degree to which they are inflicting violence.
What is your evidence that white men are raping anyone with impunity?
Oh, so like statistics around percentage of sexual assault in terms of reporting to the basically how many sexual assaults are reported versus how many are prosecuted versus how many ever end up in any conviction. So like there's way, 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 way more sexual assaults reported than are ever taken to court. And after that small number that are taken to court, the number goes way, way down on the ones that are taken to court and then the ones that are convicted.
Are these juries all white men?
Sorry, I couldn't hear you there for a second.
Are the juries all white men?
That's a great question. I don't know. I would have to go check that out.
Well, if that's not the case, how is it that it's their fault when it could just be juries that are not convicting you? You didn't prove your case, things of that nature. I mean, this is not a situation where, you know, you're being raped on videotape and nobody's going to jail. So, I mean, again, what is your evidence that, you know, they're just raping you with impunity?
Well, for instance, I mean, there are some cases of that where a girl or a woman has been raped on video and the person hasn't been convicted. There are, unfortunately, instances of that.
Okay, I'll say this last thing and I'll conclude here. Mm-hmm. That is not saying that there are some instances. That's not proving that this is some issue with mass and that overall, they are raping people with impunity. That doesn't prove that at all. I mean, there are isolated cases of a lot of things, and you've given me an example that you just admitted were isolated cases. It does not prove, you know, what you claim to be proving. But thank you for answering my questions, and thanks, Gus. Thanks, everyone. I'll mute my line.
Indeed. The person...
And I'd be happy to send along... If folks are interested, they have to send along the statistics on that or the research on that if people are interested.
For sure. I will forward along if anyone is interested. The caller who dialed in, I guess you're on the VOPE line. If you dialed in on the VOPE line and you had a question for Anna Brown Griswold, you should be with us.
Good evening. Can you hear me?
You're a little low. If you could speak up, that would be helpful.
Okay, I'm sorry about my mic. Good evening, everybody. Good evening to the host and the guest. My first question is, what would you be willing to give up or forego permanently in order to counter your racism, and why?
Yeah, thank you. That is something I'm thinking about a lot these days. The first thing I'm thinking about is financially. Like, what am I willing to forego of the power I have financially, you know, getting paid a certain amount? And so one of the things I think about is like, okay, here's my fee. And I do what's called a sliding scale, which means so I set aside a certain number of slots where I charge very little. And so that's, am I willing to give up some income to be able to serve people who, if they so choose, may need the kind of trauma treatment that I offer. And I would be willing to do that, and I have been, and I'm kind of getting back to that, because it's a sense of justice. Because actually the trade-off between that bit more of money to me is less important than the feeling I'm actually serving people who need it.
Do you have another question, ma'am? I thought were you trying to get your words together, get your question together? Uh-oh, did we lose you? Are you still with us, caller? I thought I just heard it. Did you have another question?
Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, I apologize. I'll rephrase the question a little bit more. Would you be willing to give up your residency to a non-white person once you found out, hypothetically, that they were turned down for a mortgage for the house or the residence you live in?
Yeah, that is, it's funny you ask about this. So I'd be willing to share. I have a baby. I need a place that I have to live with my baby to take care of her. And there is a definite willingness to share. So I live in a small community right now with another family, and it becomes like, wow, what's needed? You know, especially in Seattle, where there's like a housing crisis and folks are being displaced left and right. You know, willing to share.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, I think so.
Yes, ma'am.
So is your answer yes or no?
I think it's yes to sharing. Like, I would need to have a place to live, in the sense of I would need to have a place for me and my partner, my baby, to be housed. And then willing to give up having that just to myself or to my family.
Okay, may I ask one more question?
Mm-hmm, totally.
What is your typical thought or reaction when you counter a non-white homeless person?
I would say concern, wondering what's happened for them. Like, okay, what has happened? Did they just get displaced, you know? What has happened to them is my first thought.
Did that answer your question, ma'am?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Context of white supremacy. Different person. Making sure I'm not getting the same folks. Did you have a question? Caller line I just opened up.
Yes, can I be heard?
Oh, yes, ma'am. Greetings, caller in the great Commonwealth of Virginia.
Greetings. Greetings to everyone on the line. To the test, you gave earlier one of your examples of your practicing racism was your not participating in a protest that non-white females were having against a bank. Can you explain a little bit more how that is an act of racism?
Yeah, to me, it was like, I am still going along with the system of white supremacy if I am not challenging it, right? So if these Native women were like, hey, show up, we need people to come, this is a challenge to the system of white supremacy, this bank is funding the destruction of this land, and I don't support that, then I'm going along with it. Does that answer your question?
Okay, so you're not participating in that protest just by your simply not being there. You think that was an act of racism?
I would say it was like continued support of white supremacy. Because for me, if I'm not doing something against the system, I'm like complicit.
And if you had participated in that particular protest or what you think was countering white supremacy, how would or what would you have done there?
I mean, mostly just like showing up with my body, you know, and listen to what the leaders were saying and taking their direction about what they wanted people to do.
So you think that yours being there would have been enough to counter racism? You wouldn't have had to do anything other than be there?
I would say not only be there, but listen to and follow the directions of non-white people.
I'm sorry, can you...
Sorry, I was coughing. I said definitely would have had to listen to and follow the direction of the leaders of color.
Okay, I'm sorry, I'm a victim. So can, what would your have listening to and follow the direction of non-white people have done to counter racism?
Yeah, here's where I would say it was more like countering white supremacy. So one aspect of that, which is here is this system where huge amounts of money are used to destroy the land of Native people, right? Whose land it is, who have the rights of it, and that's being totally overrun. And so to counter that system in even a small way, you know, is to say, like, no, stop this. Right, in whatever way, and to do so under the leadership and instruction of the leaders of color, who it's their movement, you know, it's their power. To me, would be a small, not in any way large, like a very small act of challenging white supremacy culture. Economic.
Okay, and then listening to what you just said and going off of your response to another caller's question about who you think is most confused about racism, white people or non-white people, and you gave the answer, I believe, was white people are more destructive.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
So being that you think that white people are more destructive when it comes to understanding or misunderstanding racism, what good would it be for a white person to be in a non-white space to in their efforts to counter racism if, by what you said, white people are more destructive in non-white people's understanding of racism?
Totally. That's a great question. I would only do that if that was requested, which it was in this case. It's like, hey, we need people, white, non-white, anything, to come to this and help us. Then I would. If it was primarily non-white folks who had no request for it, I would not go. That would feel like I was being invasive. It would. I would only go at a request.
Okay. I have no further questions. Thank you for answering.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate that. Caller in Virginia. Virginia's for lovers. The person who dialed in, I guess you dialed in more recently. You just got a hand up. Did you have a question for Anna Brown Griswold?
That was me again. Should I wait?
All right, on, Ivy. It confused me. I was seeing multiple numbers. Okay. Mr. M. Hondisi, did you have a question for Anna Brown Griswold? You should be with us, sir.
Yes, sir. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir. Good to hear from you.
Yes, sir. Greetings to you. I had a question for the guests. So are you inside of America, North America?
Yes, currently, yes.
So white supremacy, as I understand it, part of white supremacy is that people who classify as white invaded North America, and then they had children and stayed here in North America, which I consider that still an invasion. So why are you still here in North America? Are you here for an invasion?
That's such a good question, and it's something I really think about. So my family is from Ireland, and it's the challenge is my partner's family is from Argentina. So, you know, we're kind of going in a different direction. But I really think about that. I'm like, wow, what is it to be here as a white person that this land has been colonized? And morally, is it like, go back to Ireland? And this is a real question that I'm grappling with.
Well, I'm wondering more on the legal aspect rather than a moral Jesus or whatever you want to call it type of aspect. And legally, why are you still here?
You mean legally in terms of like...
As in, if it's an invasion and I'm a native, I'm an indigenous here, and you're an invader and you're telling me you have to think about your invasion. I'm just... You know, aside from that, you're thinking about it. Why are you still in America? Why are you still here?
Legally,
you're not supposed to be here.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah, I would agree. You know, and it's like, okay, what is it? How do I come to grips with that and the possibility of leaving?
What does comes to grips? You haven't left. You're coming to grips with not leaving, or are you leaving? Are you leaving?
I'm in the process of thinking about it. You know, it's my family is here. My work is here. How do I uproot? Where do I take them? You know.
Okay, I have another question. So, if you're here illegally as a white person in an invasion in my land, the indigenous person, what do you say your consequence should be for breaking our laws and for killing our people and still being here in the invasion? What is your consequence personally, and what's the consequence of white people? What should it be?
Sorry, I missed that last part.
It seems that there could be a few different types of consequences. What should the consequence be for you still being here in the invasion in my land?
What do you think it should be?
No, I'm asking you.
I like honestly really answer from my heart.
I don't have any further questions. Thank you.
Appreciate that. Mhandisi. Let's see, the person who called in. Last, I'm having such a hard time picking out the numbers. I don't know, something with the screen. Last four digits, 8458. 8458. Did you have a question for Anna Brown Griswold?
Hello again. I called from a different line since I had trouble with my mic. May I be heard?
Oh, you sound a lot clearer this time.
Sorry about that. Apologies again. I wanted to refine the two questions I asked you earlier about foregoing housing and also encountering a homeless non-white person. Would you be willing to share your residency with a non-white homeless person, if they, in fact, you know, verifiably that they're homeless and have been for some time.
Yeah, it's definitely something I'd be open to. So I certainly go open to that because I live with other people. I have to get that confirmed by them technically too. But that's definitely something I'd be open to. And so actually, so the community that I live in is hopefully going to move in the next year to a state where we would have room for people. So right now it's pretty tight in our home. But we're hoping that when we move, that there's going to be a space that we could do that. You know, we could say like, oh my God, we need a place to sleep tonight, you know?
Are you the primary owner or occupant of your residency?
No, we rent. We rent our house. And I'm just one of the people who's on the lease.
Okay. I also wanted to ask you one other thing. When encountering a non-white homeless person, do you ever or have you ever immediately have a first emotional reaction of fear instead of concern?
Not that I'm recalling. I could imagine if it was at night by myself, any person I see, I could have a little fear. But that's not been my experience. It's been more like, yeah, what's happened for this person? You know, and I might stop and talk and ask and say, what happened? How, you know, do you want to talk?
Have you ever asked a non-white homeless person or what was their situation or spoken with them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, well, that is all I wanted to ask. Thank you very much. I'll mute my line.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate that. Person who called in, Mr. Agnostic, you should be with us, sir.
Hello, may I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I have a total of three questions. My first question is, if a person who is classified as white acknowledges that racism, the system of white supremacy, globally exists, but takes the stance that they are neutral towards the system of white supremacy, do you believe that the white person is practicing racism by taking a neutral stance?
Yes.
Okay. Second question. Since you are a white woman, I would like to know how have you specifically practiced racism on non-white black females?
Yeah, that's a good question. So honestly, the first one that comes to mind was in school, and there was a really gifted, really smart black woman, and ways that I was competitive with her and like wanted to be as smart as her, and internally thought, you know, like I want to be better than her.
This is an additional question, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever apologized to that non-white black female for practicing racism on her?
No, and I really wish I could be in touch with her to do that. Yeah. And maybe
okay,
I'll look her up and see where she is now.
Okay, my last question. What do white people talk about when there are no non-white black people around?
Mm-hmm. It totally varies. And I would say it really varies the group of white people I'm around. So the group of white people I'm around, who I'm friends with now, may talk about everything from, you know, I'm thinking about a walk I took with a white friend the other day, like, talk about challenging white supremacy. Now, that's a really different group than, like, my family. And I would say, like, part of my family, they would talk about the economy. They would talk about my dad's side of the family. They would talk about sports. And they would say things that I think are racist.
Can you please give an example? Can you please give a few examples of what you think that they said that was racist?
Yes. So one was the example of, like, I was having lunch with my cousin last year, and he was like, oh, no one lives in Baltimore anymore. And I was like, are you kidding me? You mean, like, you're talking about white people. That's what you're talking about, and that's racist, right? Or another example was I was visiting, so part of my family's on the East Coast, I was visiting, and one of my in-laws started using a Chinese accent. He's white. And I was like, oh, my freaking God, you know? And I said, look, I find this really offensive, you know? So I say things when I'm there, but my guess is that that just goes on there.
I have an additional question, if I may ask. It's my last one.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you continue to surround yourself with white people who practice racism?
You know, this is a hard one. I feel like the connections I have with some people in my family who practice racism like that, I'm like, God, do I have to relate? Like, they're my family, but I really don't want to. And so I'm trying to come to terms with, like, do I just not relate to those family members? Do I just, like, feel like, I'm sorry, I just don't want to even be in the presence? Do I try and call people out? Like, I'm trying to figure that one out.
Thank you. That is all.
Context of white supremacy. I think earlier in the broadcast, unless I'm mistaken, you said that you are being honest, that you're still trying to get over your own racism. I might be paraphrasing, but if that's true, is it accurate to say that you, Anna Brown Griswold, are a racist white supremacist?
I would say it's like a yes and. Like, do I still find conditioning that is from white supremacist culture? Yes. And do I work my ass off to combat that? Yeah.
Oh, this is enough. Well, I guess let me ask the question again. So is it accurate to say that you, Anna Brown Griswold, are a racist white supremacist? And the definition that I use for that, an individual classified as white who directly, indirectly, consciously, and or unconsciously mistreats someone or someone's because they are not white. By that definition, would it be accurate to say that you are a racist white supremacist?
With that definition, yeah.
Okay. The
part of it, can I just
go ahead.
Take a minute with that? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that part of, like, wow, do I, you know, I invested money in a company last year, and is that company engaging in racist practices? Probably. So am I contributing? Yeah. You know, like that, I can find that.
Probably in a myriad of other ways, not snitching on racists. It seems that you have, at least from what you told us on the program, that you've had quite a few racists in your family. And the great answer to that question would have been a rhetorical question, although I say it's incorrect for white people to answer a question with a question. When the last caller asked about your connections and your family and what have you to these racists, and why do you find yourself, you know, consistently relating to these racist white people, what does it mean to be white is really gets to the heart of that question. Why do you consistently find yourself relating to racists? And the other thing that I thought was really important, I think we had some racial narrowing concept
I've been talking about the concept. I was just too ignorant to come up with a name. Our listener in Florida put a label on it, racial focal pointing, where talking about some of these individuals in your family who will make, you know, I guess use some sort of racist accent, or the cousin who said that nobody lives in Baltimore anymore, racist coding for there's no white people there anymore. I resist that notion. These individuals over here are racist, when we've been talking to someone who said consistently, I am doing things that are racist. What does it mean to be white? That's really the way I think we should be processing it, not these people over here. Incidentally, with what you've mentioned, have you heard any racist jokes in your life?
Yeah, that was like that brother, that in-law saying, like using that accent was supposed to be a joke.
I'm sure, was that the first time, or there are other racist jokes you've heard?
For sure. Honestly, not in a while, because I definitely, in my chosen friends, chosen family, do not tolerate that.
If you can remember any racist jokes before we exit here, that would be grand. I'm trying to move briskly in our time that we have left. Since the question of sexual intercourse being constructive as it relates to racism, white supremacy, you said you've been in this area for 10 years. I think that's long enough. If you've been in the Seattle area for 10 plus years, you know who Mary Kay Letourneau is?
Unfortunately, I don't.
Oh, wow. Woo! Cowbell on that one. I don't know if you could be in Seattle for 10 years and not know who Mary Kay Letourneau. Wow. I think I better probably a lot of our listeners know who that is. All right. Are you familiar with the work of psychiatrist, general and child psychiatrist, Dr. Frances Kress-Welsing?
A bit. Yeah, I read a little bit of hers.
If anyone is ignorant about racism, it's Black people. What do you remember of her work?
I actually remember, so I was reading something from the ISIS papers a couple of years ago, basically about being threatened by Black folks' sexuality and how that is not talked about a lot. That's just the first thing that's coming to mind about that. And I was actually just looking at Dr. Miranda on the video talking about the experience of African folks in America, and I don't think she used the word confusion, but displacement, and decentering.
Interesting. That's an interesting way of describing Dr. Welsing's work. I know a major part of her theory, what she talks about in the ISIS papers, in terms of white genetic annihilation, that white people being the minority, individuals classified as white, being a tenth, if that, of the global population, and their fear and anxiety about being such a small percentage of the global population is what motivates their hostility and violence towards non-white people, Black people in particular, worldwide. What do you think of her theory in terms of this is why white people are practicing white supremacy?
I think it's a bit more I think there that could be a part of it, and there's also the part of like tremendous economic exploitation that has been core, that has like been like extraction of wealth. That is also central. You know, it's like the U.S., the money made in the U.S., the reason the U.S. is, you know, now totally wealth unequal and has been for a long time. But that money was made on the unpaid labor of Africans. So there's this like big piece about white supremacy that was about exploitation of labor and the justification of that. And I look at like Ibram Kendi's work on that, that is, yeah, I respect a lot.
Interesting. I had a thought on that, but with our time running, I wanted to make sure I had a compensatory investment request that I wanted to get in. The whole reason that I found out about you at all was because I was doing yoga, which I started at the beginning of the year after my residence flooded. That was my stress relief, even though part of my yoga practice has been stressful because of white supremacy, racism. But I have been so thrilled with my practice. It's been so healthy for me, and I've been talking about it so much on the program and encouraging listeners to practice yoga because I think it has so many wonderful benefits physically, spiritually, just all the way around. It's wonderful. And I have been encouraged by lots of the folks I've been practicing with, like, hey, you take so many classes and you're really serious about your practice, you should be an instructor. And I've heard it a lot that I've heard it enough that I've said, hey, maybe that would be a one way that I could work against racism. I could be an instructor and incorporate my own counter-racist message into my practice. And I could teach non-white people. I could make it. That's going to be what I'm going to do is I'm going to just teach classes for Black people. I'd like to make a compensatory investment request if you could finance my yoga teaching instructions. I think it's like 3 months or whatever it is for that. Is that something that you were talking about, economic reparations before? Would you be willing to finance?
I would be interested in that. Yeah, I would. You know, my first thought is the money that I was paid for the class, why don't I just give it directly to you? For that,
for the yoga teacher training?
Yeah, totally.
This is one I'd prefer it to not be slipshod. Like, I feel like this is one where, like I said before, like, I feel like white people could solve this problem today if they really wanted to, and it comes down to it, they don't want to do that. They enjoy practicing racism. I feel like a white person in Seattle, like yoga training, they could knock that out easily. Like, I feel like this is something that shouldn't be like slipshod, or because that sounds like what they did at the yoga studio when I was asking about attending the class. Like, you know, you could pay a percentage or something. Like, I feel like they should be able to knock out whatever the bill is. Like, no problem. Got it. Yoga teacher training. Great. That's some. And I mean, that's constructive. It's not like I'm asking for crack cocaine or something.
Oh, totally. No, I'm like, yeah. Yes and yes, and it's just my first thought, like, oh, great. I wasn't meaning it as, like, that and only that. I was like, ooh, that's a great place to take it from, and let me see where else I can.
Oh, okay. Yes, that's something I would love to do. Yoga training, once I can. I'm doing a scholarship today. It's not even like I'm just I'm trying to fill out a scholarship. Like, I'm very serious about my yoga, and I think that's something I would enjoy doing, being a yoga instructor. So, yes, as I
would love to support you in that, Gus.
Awesome. Great. Listeners, that's something perhaps you can look forward to. We can do the Cows radio program, and then you can take a yoga class with Gus, and we can do some stretching and talk about racism a little bit in class and do some meditation, perhaps. I think that would be really helpful. Do we have anybody who had a final question before we let Anna Brown Griswold go for the evening? Anybody have a final question they wanted to get in? Defer to our, I think, was that Ivy?
Yes.
Proceed.
Okay. It feels great to be a woman on this program. I just wanted to quickly ask, there was a string of white men not that long ago. They were all on the news. And they were on the news because they were fired because white women were accusing them of sexual assault. And before they were convicted and all of that, they were just fired. And so my question is, how did sexism and patriarchy help those white men?
Sorry, I couldn't hear that. I couldn't hear part of it. Who were the men?
There were white men, and they were on the news. A string of them had been fired because white women had accused them of sexual harassment on the job. And my question is, how did patriarchy and sexism help those white men? They were fired before they were even convicted or anything. They just were fired just because they were accused by white women.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I don't know. I'm guessing that it didn't help them in that case.
Okay, go ahead, Mr. Firefighter.
Yes, thank you, ma'am.
to the white person. Somewhere in the latter half of this program, you made the comment that you have been working your ass off and in regards to racism, white supremacy. And my question is, as a non-white person, and I'm speaking in general for non-white people, period, should we be concerned about how hard you're working to solve this problem? If so, why we should be concerned about it? If not, why should we not be concerned about it?
I wouldn't think that you would need to be, or it would be beneficial to be concerned about it. It's more like, I'm trying to do this. I probably fail all the time. And it's not my effort or what I do pales in comparison. You know, like it has no place even, you know?
So when you are giving answers, there's a tendency that your voice goes down to where it's almost inaudible.
Oh, shoot. Can you hear me now?
Yes. Could you start over again as far as an answer to that question? Why should non-white people, victims of racism, white supremacy, be concerned with you or any other white person? Because it's, you said it because you wanted us to know something. And so why, and I consider it to be like an insult, really. Although something that I expect out of a white person doesn't really, you know, I'm gonna sleep tonight, regardless of your comment, but I think it's an insult. But why would you say that? And should we be concerned about how hard you're working?
No, you definitely should not be concerned about that.
What is the only thing that non-white people in regards to white people should be concerned about under the global system of racist white supremacy?
I'm not sure because I don't have your experience. I don't feel like I could ever speak for you or say what would serve you best, you know? It's like, the best I could even think of would be like, there are amazing, profound, brilliant leaders, non-white leaders, who have the best ideas on how to combat white supremacy and just to see what they're saying.
Well, wait a minute. Under a global system of racist white supremacy, is there such thing as a non-white leader? Or isn't all of our leaders white?
I would say, like, I think it depends what you mean by leader. So what does leader mean?
What do you mean?
I mean leader, like someone who is innovating, who, like, I think about just reading Ibram Kendi today. And, like, he has done this, like, groundbreaking scholarship. He has done so much research. He is, like, leading the way on whole new, not new, but, like, putting together fields of knowledge in an airtight way. And so I think of him as, like, a leader in history, you know, like, in studying history, he's a leader.
I didn't get that. That was it. I really didn't get an answer, but to be expected.
Did you want to restate your last question to give one more chance about leaders, black leaders, or what we mean when we say leader? Did you want to give one chance to get that, see if we can get an answer to that one?
Yes. Isn't the combination black, which is non-white leader, is that a contradiction under a global system of racist white supremacy?
I say like yes and no. Yes, in terms of.
Whoa. When you're talking to a non-white person, you have to be much more clearer than that. Now, I'm challenging the guest to be honest. You were asked to be honest. Yes and no is not an answer. It's confusing me, which is a no-no for a white person to do to a non-white person.
Yeah, so I think I would ask, like, what does leader mean to you? So then I can make sure I'm answering clearly.
I also, but my last question was, Gus asked me to be clear on it, and it was, under the global system of racism and white supremacy, is it a contradiction for it to be such thing as a non-white or a black leader? Global system of racism, white supremacy. I'm putting an emphasis on that. How can it be any other victims to be leaders?
I guess it's
comment.
Yeah, I think there can be leaders, and I've seen them, and they're amazing.
We'll leave it there.
To fight against white supremacy.
We'll leave it there. Ironically, as I was looking, Ibram X. Kendi, when you look on his webpage, which is his name, it says one of the nation's leading scholars on racism. It's one of the first sentences on his web. I'll just say what I said before. The experts on racism, white supremacy are white. All of them. That's either true or false. Just making statements. The experts on this planet in the known universe are classified as white, like our guest, Anna Brown Griswold. Was grand having you on the program. I will definitely contact about details for the yoga teaching instruction. Really excited about that. Thank you for hanging out with us for the evening and fielding all the, I think we got all of our listeners' questions, for hanging out and getting our questions in. We'll look forward to having you back on the program. I'm so glad that I guess that's why I was at the yoga studio there, to experience racism and to see your workshop. But thank you so much for hanging out. And if you would be willing to forward the syllabus for your workshop, I would be willing to check that out. And if any listeners, if you want to see like what some of the films that were shown or books or, you know, what some of the material presented was, if Anna Brown Griswold, if she gets it to me, I will forward it along to you all so you can check it out as well.
Great. Take care. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Evening. Context of white supremacy. I'm going to copy and paste Ibram X. Kendi. I'm going to copy and paste what it says from his website. I'm not familiar like with his literature, even though I've like seen him on television before. And I think I probably have read some of his material online. Like, he writes a lot of material, The Undefeated and other places as well. I probably have. You all have probably seen him too. If you go to his website, which is his name, you'll be like, oh yeah, I've seen him on TV before and what have you. All I would say on that, he's a victim of white supremacy. He has VGQ, Victims Guaranteed Qualified. That means he can take whatever position that he wants to about racism, white supremacy. All I would say is, he says what he says. That doesn't make him a leader just because he gets books published or he makes a lot of money or he's on television or whatever other criteria we want to use. That does not make him a leader, put that in quotes, to me. A leader, number one, cannot be subject to racist man, racist woman, racist child. That automatically disqualifies you. And if you are a non-white person, I've concluded, unfortunately, like myself, you are subject to the system of white supremacy. If you are a leader, you just make decisions. Things are going to happen. This is what it's going to be at 10 o'clock. And, you know, I don't have to worry about no white folks or racists or none of that. I just go out and do what I'm going to do. And that's just what it's going to be. And anybody that's got a problem, you know, see me in the next 5 seconds, you know, and we can get it solved. Like, that is a leader. And I don't know any black person in the known universe that qualifies. Just again, and some of these things just come down definition. What do we mean? That's why we start definition of racism, white supremacy, that we can be quick in getting through things. I am very excited about the yoga instruction. That's like more than anything, I am super excited about being able to do that. I think someone had asked like years ago, and this might have been like way back at the beginning of the cows, like a decade. They said, hey, what do you do for fun? And I said, I'm going to need to think about that, which I've said before is cool. If you need time, no problem. Just, hey, sometimes you need to admit that to yourself. I need time. I'm going to have to think about this. No problem there. So I've been thinking for almost 10 years. It took me to think, oh man, what do I do for fun? Obviously, I don't have anything that I do for fun. Not that that's humorous, but now I do at least have one thing that I can say. I do enjoy yoga. That is one thing that I do for fun when I'm not talking about racism, white supremacy, and absolutely doing the instructor thing. Because I was thinking, like, as I think back in February, I started hearing people saying, you should be a yoga instructor, non-white people and white people. You should be a yoga instructor. You're so serious about it. And you take all these classes and your form has gotten really good and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, you should be a yoga instructor. You should be a yoga instructor. And at first, I had a very selfish framework about it. And I still do, to be truthful, that I could be a yoga instructor and then I will never have to go to another studio to be kicked by a white woman. Like, that was the mind frame that I had even before I was kicked by that race soldier, that I could totally cut out going to the studio. I could make great little sequences for myself and I could practice in the comfort and serenity of my own residence. Like, wow, what would be better? But a non-white instructor said, hey, broaden your vision. You could share. Like, yoga has been that guy. Keep saying just that alone. You should just keep saying that. 50 pounds to lose 50 pounds in 5 months. Like, just doing yoga and eating vegan. Like, wow. Just, and I think it is super important because I have enjoyed playing basketball and doing other physical things. Running, I would say yoga is one of the few things, maybe one of the only things that I can think of that if you practice regularly, where you will really appreciate your body. And I think that's something that in the system of racism, white supremacy would be very beneficial to black people, like with all of the abuse that is heaped on us and anti-blackness to condition us to hate everything about us, our skin, our complexion, our melanin, our hair, everything about us, to do something where you will absolutely just appreciate and love your body, yourself. Like, no, I cannot think of very few things. Super, super short list. Yoga is on that list where you will just really, really feel good about yourself. Just seeing the growth in your practice and being in shape, and it is amazing. So yes, that is something. Hopefully very, very soon you'll be able to take Gus T's yoga class. We could do a little bit of talking. I don't really like talking about, like, that's exactly what I said. This is for not racism. Like, this is just serenity. Have some self-care, peace, focus on your breathing, meditate, have some quiet, very important to rejuvenate. So I am super excited about the yoga. Other than that, lots of practice of racism, white supremacy, good questions. I'm always excited when I don't have to ask the sex question, because I had to do that for a long, long time. So I always appreciate when listeners are able to pitch in and ask that question. I can't believe I couldn't find the sound clip that says, if anyone is ignorant about racism, it is black people. I always love including that sound clip. She was familiar with Dr. Welsing. She was familiar with Dr. Marimba Ani. She was familiar with Harriet Washington medical apartheid. Like, it's rare that I bump into a black person who is familiar with all three of those individuals. Maybe I'm just, you know, I'm in Seattle. I'm not around enough black people, but white people are not and cannot be ignorant. And I cannot stress enough, any individual classified as white, including Anna Brown Griswold, yoga, teaching, instruction, tuition, or no, any white who is suggesting or promoting that notion, that is a major, like a colossal act of white supremacy. It keeps non-white people in this mind state that these things just keep happening willy-nilly or coincidentally. And that, you know, if we let white people know that this is happening, they will change their behavior, as opposed to, oh, wait a minute, they're doing this deliberately. In fact, they enjoy torturing niggers. That's what they wake up to do. Like, oh, okay. And I have a totally, now that I have an accurate understanding of the problem, now we can go about developing a correct framework to permanently resolve this issue. That's what we want. Logic, 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 logic. Did anybody have comments that they needed to get in?
Oh, I did. Gus, I wish you the best. Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, I wish you the best on your yoga instructing. Thank you for letting me, you know, ask so many questions. And I'm sorry, I had to call back in because, you know, they're charging me for this. The races are charging me. So I thought I would, you know, call back in at, like, maybe the last 30 minutes of the program, or like I usually do. But then I thought of a question. I won't do that again, seeing that it confuses you. Next time, I'll just, you know, stay on the line. The last thing that I wanted to say is, you know, thank you and Mr. Firefighter for yielding the floor. And I want to say, Gus, that I'm deeply sorry for saying to the firefighter, you know, to go ahead. I definitely, obviously, wanted him to go ahead, but that was not my place to say that, because I didn't know what you had in mind and how you needed to manage time. It seems like with the guests, we were already a little over time by the time I spoke anyway, so that just was not my place to say that. And it was just kind of a reaction to where I didn't really know what to say, because when I said what I said to her, she actually seemed to get angry. She seemed to have a visceral response to what I said, and she seemed to answer me in a real discourteous tone, in my view, and it kind of threw me off. I know I shouldn't be surprised, but I was surprised, and so I just kind of said something quick, and that's kind of what came out. Go ahead, you know, Mr. Firefighter, but, you know, this is not my program, and that was not my place to say that. So I just wanted to apologize to you. Apparently, you didn't think anything about it. You haven't said anything, but I still, you know, owe you an apology, and I just wanted to say that, and I'm in my mind.
No apologies needed. Appreciate the, I guess, respect for the platform. Much obliged. What do you think about your question? Ruffled her feathers, pardon the metaphor.
I think the fact that she was so passionate about her propaganda of this sexism and patriarchy thing, because sexism and patriarchy, as it's defined, does not exist, because it is not defined as white men are doing X, Y, and Z. It is defined as men are doing X, Y, and Z. So she was just very passionate about trying to prove this point, and she kept on trying to come back to it, and she wouldn't answer the question when I said, how does it exist? She just kept on saying other stuff that did not say how it exists. And so when I brought up white men actually being reprimanded because of something that they were only accused of doing to white women, and they had extreme consequences, getting fired for just being accused, that seemed to set her off. It doesn't seem like she likes for that point to be disproven. And it could have been just the whole exchange between us to where, in my view, I proved that that does not exist on so many levels. And then that could have been, as they say, the last straw. But it seemed like it may have, you know, also been just that particular thing, just even the way that I phrased it, that how did that help them, which I got from either another guest or you or someone who said, I believe, how did patriarchy or sexism help Emmett Till? But yeah, she didn't like an example of especially the only man that she could hold on to that's supposedly subjugating her and all that. It was just white men. That's all she could hold on to. And it seems like when I crushed that, she just seemed to be kind of set off by that. But I could be incorrect, but that's just the only thing I can think of. Do you have any thoughts or theories? Or?
I think the excuse me. I think conflation is a really important, powerful weapon
with regards to confusing non-white people, the concept conflation, meaning when we talk about racism, white supremacy, we also have to make sure that we include homophobia, patriarchy, ageism, sexism, anything else that we can toss in, able-bodyism, anything else that we can toss in to dilute the conversation so that we do not have focus and logic on white supremacy. Racism dominates everything by far. That's a very important period from my conclusion. And then that seemed to be something that she was including from the very beginning. I think you pointed that out. She came back to it repeatedly. So it may have just been that, you know, that was an important part of her propaganda, as she termed it. That might have been an important part of the package that she was going to deliver to us this evening. And repeatedly poking holes in that and pointing out the inaccuracies of how that was being presented might have disrupted her from her code a bit.
I like when you said the package that she was going to send, and I just have to say this, Gus, what you said, what's a nigger? Oh my God, I could not stop laugh. That is one of the funniest things I ever heard in my whole life. Just the whole thing of how you did it, and it was so accurate, but it was so funny. And as you can hear, every time I think about it, I can't help but laugh. I can't wait to listen to this tomorrow, like over and over and over. I'm gonna break my repeat button for just that clip right there. That should be sound clip, that whole part. But that's it. That'll be my line. Thanks, Gus.
For sure, for sure. Slight humor on the cows from time to time. But I mean, if anything.
Can I be heard?
Oh, yes, sir. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. As I mentioned before, recalled another period of time that she basically wanted all of the listeners and all of them, and I'm sure she was aware of this, that all of the listeners were non-white people. She wanted them to know that she was working her quote unquote ass off, which sounded like a definite and intended statement, sort of anger, that sort of thing. And, logically speaking, a white person and how hard they're working should not have any merit whatsoever on victims of racism, white supremacy, logically speaking. The only thing it is relative is to solve the problem. And even at the advent of the problem being solved, I don't see any whoop-de-doo or you know, horns going off, gunshots going off, or anything like that in quote-unquote celebrating, because one thing that they can't compensate for is the millions of souls who are at the bottom of waterways in the world due to the system of racist white supremacy, on top of the ground as well as under the ground, due to different very imaginative means of destroying people. So that all of that played an impact into my questioning, you know, based on her reaction, which I would say, as I mentioned before, would be considered to be an insult. Although, as far as it affecting me, you know, I expect it out of white people, you know, as far as that type of attitude. But I just wanted to bring it up to the listeners as well as to identify to the suspected racists that we did hear you.
Indeed.
And I could learn from Miss Ivy about being courteous also. She really is a good motivator for me to go about the means of working on myself being courteous.
Gus, can I respond to that?
For sure.
Oh, Mr. Firefighter, thank you so much for your kind words. I thought you were great. I thought everybody, their questions and, you know, their statements, that they were so great. And it was so beautiful to see people, the men, the women, and even especially the men, including Gus, not take it easy on her because she's a female, because they are the masterminds behind this. They raise these races. I mean, they do so much, and they kill us too, and they kill our men. That Shelby female cop who murdered Terrence Crutcher, I believe it was. But I thought you were great, Mr. Firefighter. I certainly didn't think that you were, or Imhan DC, or anyone else who they could try to say was discourteous because they were aggressively questioning her. I think that the way you handled it was great, and I think it's wonderful also that Gus did not, you know, stop it or anything like that, and he never does. But yeah, I thought you were great, and I don't know if you're speaking about, you know, your personal life, but when you talk to the people, I've heard you get upset sometimes, and you know they're racist, and you should be upset. But I thought you were great tonight, and I learned a lot from your line of questioning, and I'll move on.
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Good evening, everybody. Once again, this is the caller from New Orleans. I called a while back. So this is I. You can call me Irie. I wanted to comment on her reply to giving up her residency. I'm not surprised she said that she would share and did not say that she would, you know, give up her residency, because what I found through my experience talking with and also reading about white people, they're very, very materialistic. And once they conquer or inhabit something that they in their minds feel is rightfully theirs, there's not going to be any, you're not going to see any instance for the most part of them giving that up to a non-white person to equalize, you know, their white supremacy. And it also reminded, or what I'm reminded of, when the young man asked her about leaving America, since she is in fact an invader. It reminded me of something a white man said a while back. He said that he read, quote, that it was okay that the Europeans came over and took the land from the Native Americans because they weren't doing anything constructive with it, end quote. That those are his words. So, yeah, that's all I have to say for now. I'll let somebody else speak. Thank you.
Appreciate that, Irie in New Orleans. Did we miss anybody? Any other folks have commentary that they want to add in? Everyone satisfied? Our caller in Virginia. Yes, ma'am.
Apologies. I just wanted to make sure I got this thing, because I thought about it a second after I muted my line. I had disturbances in my residence, so I meant to ask this question. But I noticed that she, when you asked her, as well as at least the a female caller asked her about what specific acts of racism and white supremacy she participates in, how she practices racism and white supremacy. In both instances, she brought up, and this kind of coincides with what the retired firefighter is pointing out, how I think she wants so-called kudos for her, whatever she thinks she's doing as far as countering racism. But she brought up what she doesn't do, or what she feels like she doesn't do, and how she's not, in her words, countering the system of white supremacy instead of what she does do. I just bring that up because it takes me a minute to catch that when they're doing that. So I bring that up mainly for listeners on the line to pay attention to something I know I have to work on. And yeah, to point out what the retired firefighter was saying about her mentioning how she works her tail off and all of that, I got a very strong vibe that she just wants kudos for this. And it's very disingenuous. So, yeah, I just wanted to make sure I brought that up. Thank you. And I'll meet my wife.
Appreciate that. Always great to point out patterns. Very important. She did have a lot of those examples. Not going to fight the protest with the indigenous women of Seattle. Was there another female caller that was going to share?
I made a mistake and pressed the button. I'm sorry, Gus. I unmuted my line accidentally.
We will live. Anybody else have commentary they want to make sure they get in?
I also noticed what the last caller just pointed out. Like, yeah, she was, I was not fighting, when I'm not fighting for reparations, I'm practicing racism. Did she say that, Gus? Did she say that?
Yep.
Yeah.
I did think it was significant. I think the only example of mistreating a black person was the black female that she said she was in a competition with. Like, even from a young age, that doesn't sound like someone who does not understand what it means to be white. Cause I think she said this was when she was in her teen or adolescent years or whatever, but this black female was really smart and she was in a competition where she had to be better than her. Like that, as I stated, white people cannot be ignorant about racism. I think that was the only like direct act of racism that she shared. I'm pretty sure she had some racist jokes as well, but you know, that's part of the pattern too, right? Most of the whites that we get on the program can't remember any racist jokes, even though they will admit to having heard thousands in some cases. That's it. Get one more in. Anybody else have a comment they need to get in?
May I speak?
Yes, ma'am.
I'm going to make this real quick. In regards to everyone's observation of her saying she works her ass off, I also suspect that she's saying that in a way to merit or earn her place in the system of racism, white supremacy, and the comforts therein by saying, I occasionally make myself uncomfortable for non-white people, therefore I deserve every comfort and convenience that is given to me because of this system.
Absolutely. Absolutely. With that, folks have any additional thoughts, commentary, we'll be here tomorrow, Friday, Saturday. You should have ample opportunity to share, or if you listen to the archive, if you missed the live broadcast, you can give a thought on what went down. I'll report back. She keeps her word and finances my yoga instructing. That will be great. I'm looking forward to that. Great questions. Always think it's important to question whites with suspicion and just follow the logic, as Mr. Fuller advises all the time. Follow the logic. Make sure that they answer your question, but follow the logic. Follow the logic. We'll be here tomorrow for Workplace Racism, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. I was checking my email to see if people, because sometimes they'll write questions for, you know, the broadcast that we're doing right now. And they were emailing for workplace racism and different workplace incidents, which is, you know, that's what people are supposed to do, untiljustice@gmail.com. But that is tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, workplace racism, counter-racist suggestions. Friday, Invisible Man, Ralph Ellison. We did not get one single dissenting vote on the book. So I assume enough folks were satisfied that we can proceed unabated without opposition. Ralph Ellison, Invisible Man, Gus T. Renegade's top five right up there with Medical Apartheid, The ISIS Papers. Absolutely outstanding book, and we just got started. Looking forward to that this Friday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. If you have other guest suggestions, questions, gripes, if you can't find something in the archives, drop an email or workplace racism. You can send those in as well. UntilJustice@gmail.com. UntilJustice@gmail.com. Certainly, sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. Race soldiers, with all of the confusion and illogic that they promote, I would think we would want to be sharp, sober at all times so that we can use our brain computers at maximum efficiency to process information, process logic, and so that we can crank out concepts to permanently solve the problem: racist man, racist woman, racist child. Certainly, if we are in a vehicle, we want to be buckled up, sober at all times. Let's do everything that we can to minimize contact with race soldiers. That's it. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other Black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of Black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another Black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.